Okay, I can't think of a song to start with. This is Magali Rodriguez-Mossman, and this session is called Healing Sounds. And I can't think of a song to start with, basically because my husband just came home. And I got distracted saying hello to him and finding out that he didn't catch any fish at Donkey Lake. And all that, but play anything, she says. Well, here's one. You just made me think of one. This is called Spirit of God.
Spirit of God in the clear running water, blowing to greatness the trees on the hill.
To start with something that when you came to healing sounds, I'm not going to assume that you believe in them to begin with. Yes.
I want to make sure you take this phone by.
It's I knocked, but I'm not sure if they're going to keep the tape. So you may want to put in your order. In part because there's a piece of a tape that I'm going to be playing so that you can hear some of the sounds that we're talking about. But I'd like to start off with research in itself, and I should say something about research. There are different kinds of research, and there are different schools of scientists that will buy one kind and won't buy another, and so on. The kind of research that we're talking about here when it comes to healing research was not accepted until very recently by a lot of people. It wasn't until 1971, 72, or 73, early 70s, that this kind of research was accepted as science by the Academy of Sciences. That was the year that Dr. Douglas Dean, he was not a PhD at the time, got the Academy of Sciences to accept parapsychology as a science. Now that term parapsychology in our Lutheran circles has very negative connotations, so we're going to demystify it a little bit, okay? I find that I use a lot of terminology and people will tell me, you know, that's a red flag for me. We can't give our words over to other people. You know, we've got to, in Cuba, we had this experience that there were people who would not wear black and red together because those were the colors of the Cuban Revolution. And they wouldn't wear olive green because that was the colors of the khaki uniforms that the, you know, the uniforms that the revolutionaries wore. Well, they were giving all their colors away. You know, just because they disagreed with the revolution, they were going to give their colors away. We do that with words, too. That's foolish. Foolishness. We have to recover those things that are ours. And this term parapsychology has always been associated with kooks and flakes and freaks and this sort of thing. But when the Academy of Sciences says parapsychology is a science, and you know they're very linear, rational people, then we have to re-look at what it is that we're talking about. What is it that we're talking about? Okay, healing research. I first was introduced to healing research not all that long ago by Dr. Douglas Dean, who's done an awful lot of it. He's also an author. He's a chemist, a biochemist. He did his research on the effect that healers have on water. And what he's found through chemistry, that healers change the molecular structure of water. How's that for a...
healers.
Healers. They change the molecular structure of water. And so he's been working through this, and it's taken him a great long time for his thesis to be accepted, in part because the people that are helping him get his PhD want it to be such precise research and so precisely done that it will stand up to the barrage of criticism that is going to come at not only the school but he himself is going to get from the linear rational people who do not accept this sort of stuff, just as a basic premise, there is no such thing as spirit. You know, some of them come from that particular spot. Some of them don't. They just it's got to be done, you know, exactly the way they do it. Well, the scientific process kind of went out the window when the quantum mechanics physicists discovered that we human beings, the observer affects the observed. We change what we see. When they found out that if you ask a particle question, it will respond like a particle, but if you ask it a wave question, it responds like a wave. Well, they couldn't deal with that. You know, because you can't be a particle and a wave at the same time, or can you? It drove them crazy for a while. Drove them absolutely crazy. Until they finally started, they had to deal in metaphysics, is what they had to do. They had to, what's the meaning of all this? You know, they don't like to do that, but they've had to. They've had to start looking at the meaning of the universe. And this wonderful, wonderful physicist, I don't know if I told this story, but I'll tell it again because I love it. This one extremely conservative physicist wrote a book, and he spent 20 years trying to disprove quantum mechanics that basically said there is no such thing as objective reality. We construct reality. That's very hard for us to hear. I may be the first one that says that. There is no such thing as objective reality. We color the world the way we choose to color it. We don't know we're choosing it, perhaps. Our whole culture gets us to color it this particular way or to skew it this particular way. We only pay attention to certain things, that skews the world, and so on. But anyway, where was I? Oh yes, this wonderful physicist who was trying to disprove quantum mechanics. He spent 20 years doing it, found out he couldn't do it. He wrote this wonderful book, and the book was reviewed in a scientific magazine. I was speaking to a physicist one time, and I told him that I was working with farm workers. I did not know he was a physicist. I said that we use new physics in the migrant camps. We get migrants to tell us about the new physics. And he was very interested, and he says, how do you do that? I said, well, we just get them to the point where they will tell us that reality is what they pay attention to. And they do that. They understand that reality is what you pay attention to. There's so much of it. There's so much reality. We choose to pay attention to only small pieces of it. And that's what we think is reality. But it's so limited. So anyway, that's one of the basic premises of physics. Reality is what you pay attention to. And Hazel Henderson, wonderful woman, was the one who put that particular phrase together. But anyway, so he was saying, that's interesting. He says, I want to tell you this. He says, I read this book review in the scientific magazine. I didn't understand the book. I would never understand the book. He said, I don't deal in those levels, you know. He said, but I read this review and I understood almost nothing of the review. He said, but there was one thing that caught my attention. because it was such a revolutionary statement from this particular physicist. He said, his conclusion was, after all these experiments, all these very linear rational experiments, he said, apparently, the universe cares that we think about it. Those were his mathematical conclusions. We know the universe cares that we think about it. In faith, we know that we're connected to all things. We know that even though we don't see an immediate reaction, we know that in prayer there is a reaction. So we don't need the scientists to prove these things to us, but it sure does my faith a lot of good. It just makes me smile to know that entire groups of people are just astounded at all these wonderful things we've always known. I love that. I just love that. There must be something I don't know about me, but I really love that. There's a Dr. Justice Smith that has done a lot of research on healing. And in fact, in 1973, there was a, let me see, the name of the film. It was given a prize. It was the award-winning documentary film of 1973 given by the United States Information Agency. Now, those of you that have never been out of this country are probably not as familiar with the USIA, but it's a State Department. It's an agency of the State Department. It puts out what our opposition calls propaganda films about the United States. You know, anything that we want to send over. In 1973, this particular film about healing and about healing research was given the prize for that year. So our U.S. government has recognized this sort of stuff as apparently good enough to send across the world. And Dr. Justice Smith is in this particular film, and what she does is she's an expert on enzymes. She's also a Catholic Franciscan nun, I believe. And what she did was she took enzymes, I don't know, remember what particular kind, but she would damage them in some way. And then she asked Dr. Olga Worrell, whose husband was a medical doctor, he died, he was also a healer, and she's a very famous healer, lives in New Jersey, or Boston? Yeah, Boston, I think. And she had Dr. Olga Worrell hold these little flasks of damaged enzymes. And then they would do their linear tests. You know, they would have control groups, and the people that were doing the examination of all these things, the students or the researchers or whatever, they wouldn't know which ones had been held and which ones hadn't, you know, which ones had been treated and which ones hadn't, and so on. And they discovered that the enzymes would be healed in the flasks that Olga Worrell held. Then what they would do is they would have other people who weren't healers hold the flasks, and didn't work quite the same way, unless they taught them a little bit about healing. They taught them what to do. If they taught them how to get into a meditative state, into a prayerful state, and ask that the enzymes would be healed, then it would happen. Not as well. Olga Worrell is a very good healer. She's done a lot of practicing, and it does take practice. But this all came out in this documentary film. And it's available, and if I could remember the name of it, it would help. But anyway, that's one, another set. Dr. Christopher Hill is the one that has put together this tape called Healing Sounds, and it comes from the University of the Trees Press in Boulder Creek, California. Now, those of you that have been with me before, you know that I don't have a whole lot of trouble accepting really good things from other people, other cultures, and so on. So I just want to say that Dr. Hill has used, and I don't know the method that he's used. I'm not really very familiar. I know of him, but I don't know the methodology that is used. I can tell you for myself that it's my own particular antenna. The room does change when these sounds are on. And I can feel in my own body that there is work going on in different energy centers. You might be able to tell the same thing. So I can say just this is my own research. It works for me. It may not work for you. My husband can't stand these sounds. So he's not even here. Besides being tired, he's glad. He doesn't have to be good. Sounds like a train to him. each of us is different. You know, we don't all have to, we're not all healed by the same things. Some, for some of us, the sign of the cross is enough. Would that it would be for all of us. For some of us, we need the sign of the cross and some music. And for some of us, we need a good massage. You know, and so on. We're all really very different. But the interesting thing about this tape, I'm going to let you hear it. Let you hear maybe 15 minutes of it. And if you want to go, you're welcome to. But the thing that made me a little bit nervous about presenting it is that in this tape, the woman explains that you are going to hear the sound of the universe up and above the sound of the human voices. We are vibrational fields. We don't look like vibrational fields. We feel like we're hard and, you know, and you can't put your hand through your arm and so on. But we're told that that's really an illusion. We are vibrational fields. And there's another book I just found, a Christian woman is talking about faith, religion, and the new physics. And she's talking about how one scientist, when he discovered what the world really was like, that he took to wearing snowshoes because he was afraid that he was going to fall through the world. Because It was so insubstantial. And they keep finding smaller and smaller, quotes, particles, but they don't want to call them things because they're not things. They're more like thought energy, is what they're saying. It's very strange language these physicists are using. Thought energy. And some people are saying that matter, our bodies, our matter is no more. It's only the densest form of spirit. Or spirit is the finest form of matter. Interesting, isn't it?
The scientists are saying that?
That's what the physicists are saying. The worldview of the new physicist is more like the mystic, the psychic, the medium, and all of those other strange people that we've always excluded from our realities and said that they were flaky. That's what their world sounds more like than the world that we describe.
How long have they been talking like this?
Since 1905. That's the awful part. 1905, when Einstein's theory of relativity.
Yeah.
Mugali, didn't Einstein say that the people that he found that could most understand his theory of relativity was the Hopi Indian children, because they didn't have the sense of time having to be linear, that all things existed at this moment.
Right. Well, see, and Einstein also says wonderful things. He said, one of my favorite quotes of Einstein's, he says, "I did not come to understand the fundamental laws of the universe through my rational mind." Isn't that beautiful? I did not come to understand the fundamental laws of the universe through my rational mind. What he did was he imagined something, and then he ran around and found mathematical equations and all sorts of other things to substantiate what he had imagined. Isn't that what the artist does? Of course. Isn't that what intuitive people do? Our imaginations are wonderful. They're just wonderful. And we haven't used them enough. Now, the other neat thing that I like to remember is that unusual things like healing sounds or healing research or stuff like that are going to be rejected by large segments of the society. They're going to be. Because we've been brought up in a very rational world. You know, been brought up to think that the rational mind is the highest form of being or something, certainly the highest form of processing. And it's very hard for us, especially those of us who have good functioning rational linear left brain minds, to accept that there might be something even better, even wholer than that. And it might be, you know, it might look more like what women do, or very sensitive men, or what Indians do, or what Easterners do. I think that's like cosmic justice or something. It's just, I just really get excited about it. Because, I think about Westerners, you know, who have such good, well-functioning linear minds, you know, that if they ever do become whole-brained, they're going to be just spectacular. They're going to be such gifts to the earth because they'll use their whole brain, you know. Whereas the East, we in the West, we are by we're so linear that we cut out all that's metaphorical. You know, in the East, they're all metaphorical and they have much functioning left brain. If we ever put ourselves together, we'd be a wonderful world. You know.
Even in religion, you think it's...
Even in religion, say more.
Well, sometimes I think that a lot of our beliefs are pretty rational. We rationalize faith out.
Yeah.
And the metaphors aren't easily understood. It takes a lot of...
Mm-hmm. We've killed the metaphors.
We haven't lived in them.
Yeah, we've killed the metaphors mostly. The you know this already from if you've seen me before, if you've talked to me at all before. I'm more interested in the nature of religious experience than I am in the nature of the structure of the church, for example. And those two are not really very compatible. I find that most theologians are more interested in the nature of the structure than the nature of the experience. In fact, experience is negative or somehow inferior to the thinking process. I reverse that. You know, to me it's much more important to be able to be in communion with God than to be able to outline God. So... That's the...
Well, haven't we in our Lutheran church especially put more emphasis upon our doctrines, our teachings, and we have the religious experience. We try to shy away from that a little bit. We try to be so objective that we try to withhold the subjective experience that is different for each individual, almost to the point of denial of it.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's so exciting to me to know that we're all holograms. My pastor doesn't have to tell me how to get to God. I can respect my pastor, but my pastor can just as well listen to me as I could listen to him or her, you know. And my child can help me get to God, because my child is a hologram too. Now, isn't that exciting? I mean, that just blows me away. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, healing sounds. The Shruti. The sound of the universe. Those of you that like doing, well, not that like doing, those of you that do meditation, if you've ever gotten into a very, very deep state, you probably will have heard this sound, but you will not have probably paid much attention to it and not realized. There, if you saw the demonstration of the hologram today or last week, there is the laser beam that goes straight, one piece of the laser beam that goes straight, and then there's the interference pattern that comes in, you know, from the other side. The ear does the same thing. It has like a sound. The ear emits a sound. And it is the sound of your ear. And then the whatever sounds come from the outside are the interference pattern. And because you've got this particular sound in there, you understand the other sounds because there's something to contrast it to. Apparently, we do that a lot. Well, the universe puts out a sound. And it's going to be fascinating to find out how many of you recognize the sound, and you'll hear it forever after. You'll hear it in those trees out there, when you get real quiet, when you get into prayer, when you get into church, you know.
Have you ever heard? I've heard people ask, like, if there were a forest with no human around and a tree fell, would there be sound? Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you have. But.
Yeah. But it's like. The physicist, I think, might say, and I'm not sure about this, but it might say, no, because we create sound. You know? You know about people. Have you heard about that in Tibet? There are still people, and in Africa too, who can begin to run, and then they get off the ground, and they run in the air across miles of terrain, and they go where they and then they come back.
They run in the air.
Now, in our Western mind, we can't do that. But basically, we can't do it because we don't think we can do it.
How do you go out in the water?
Jesus used the human instrument. Isn't that what he said? He used the human instrument? He incarnated. And he was showing us what he could do with it. And then he said, and you're going to do more than this too.
Running across the ground, then it became like astral projection.
Well, this is actually physically. It's not even astral projection. No, it's
astral projection for your mind.
Yeah, where your soul actually leaves the body. Then there's that mind travel. This is actual physical travel across the air, across water, across. That's real different. Well, you've seen the yogis walking on coals and things like that. I have a friend who got into, she's like an anthropologist. She's an anthropologist. She's the successor to Margaret Mead. Her name is Jean Houston. And she went to, I don't know what country, and she went into one of these big ceremonies. And she saw these people walking on these coals and stuff, and she got into the dances and everything. She was doing everything they were doing, and sure enough, she walked right across them too. Blew her away. But and you'll find this, by the way, they've done lots of research about people who are real intuitive and real psychic. They go into a room of people who are very linear and using different kind of energy. They can't do it anymore in that room.
They can't be
intuitive anymore. They can't pick up stuff. You know, you'll find that too. You'll find that if the energy is real different from yours, your natural abilities are diminished. Until you get to the point where you can function anyway, in spite of what's going on around you. You do it anyway. But we help one another, or we hurt one another. We hinder, you know, one another. So we have to be real aware of how we affect other people.
I must be aware when my husband's I can't cook the meal right.
That's a practical example. Really practical example.
There was a book out called Like a Mighty Wind by Mel Torre. A guy over, I think in New Guinea. It was a tribal people, they were Christians, but all of a sudden they had a Pentecost experience, the entire church. And he tells about a few people, not all of them, but a few people walking across this deep river that was flooded and would only go that deep to their ankles across the water. Some didn't believe it, of course, and they tried it and went down.
Yeah.
And here were these crocodiles all around, you know, and they went across because they wanted to get to this village to share Christ and their belief with these people in this village, and they just walked right across the... oddly enough, this book in our library, in our church, is in the fiction section.
Interesting. Is that interesting? But look what he said. The ones who didn't believe it sank.
Yeah.
It works that way. We construct reality. If we say, for example, if someone says, "I can't sing," they never will, until they change that statement. If they can't say to themselves, "I can sing." If they can't say that, they say, "I wonder if I can sing." Then they at least open it up for the universe to come in and say, "Here, try this."
But it doesn't come
out right. It can.
There's a struggle going on within me right now about the relationship between what you're saying and the so-called charismatic movement in the church, much of which I think or feel good about, okay? But some of the things I don't, I find it really difficult when people say, as some have, the reason you can't speak in tongues or the reason you haven't been filled with the Spirit is you don't believe strongly enough. You haven't attempted to do it. You haven't this, that, and the other thing. And there's an element of what you're saying here that bothers me in that same vein. And yet what you're expanding my horizons in my world, whereas they're pulling them in, and I'm having difficulty with it.
Okay. I'm glad you said that, because there's another thing that I found true about the universe is that two completely opposite things can simultaneously be true. And I love it. It's the essence of paradox. You know, it is simultaneously true that we, the, some of this very same stuff can confine us. You know, the we have different gifts. There are different pieces. There are different things that we're called to. Like, I'm a very visual person. That's why I get things visually. I can see the energy change in a room. Not everyone is going to do that. Someone else will feel it change in the room. They can walk in and they can say the negative energy is coming from over here. There's a lot of positive energy over there, and so on. They can do that. I can't do that. I can't identify negative energy anyway. I can only see positive energy. So that, that the gifts of the spirit, you know, it's like the universe, or God, chooses which direction we're supposed to go, which direction he wants us to go. And then I don't have any desire to speak in tongues, for example. Why should I? If I don't have any desire, I'm not called to do that. I am called. I do feel very called to being more and more sensitive to what the universe is saying. That I feel called to do. That's where I should go.
Okay, and that's something that everybody can do, and
if they want,
but can. Yeah.
They can do it. That, yeah. But the should is what's is where I have a problem with it. The should. Nobody should do anything that they're not called to do.
That's the difference. The divisiveness. The charismatic movement has.
Okay.
Separating in the church one group from another because one judges the other side.
Yeah.
That's the evil.
Yeah. You know, you also clarified something else for me. When I feel that what we're talking about here adds to what the church already has, doesn't subtract from it. Because if the church already has a wonderful, rational, functioning kind of spirit, well, there's nothing wrong with that. It's incomplete, but we're always incomplete. So we add to it. You know, we add the metaphorical. We add the mythical. We add the emotional and the sensual. You know, all those things, we add to it. So that when I talk about multiple channels of communication, you can't have multiple if you don't, I mean, you start with what you have, and then you go. Were you?
I got a question.
Certainly.
That energy you're talking about, you know, when you get on, when you listen to TV or whatever, and someone comes on and tells you how to make $1 million, or you always get these talk shows where people come on and they written books on how they made big money or something. Is that the same kind of energy only taken in a linear way of thought? Maybe like people who can just make money, you know, who just know how to make money, or who just know how to, you know, like, well, computers.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. Is that that same kind of energy?
I wish I could tell you that it only works for the good. It doesn't. It works either way, unfortunately. If the Christians abandon or do not use these energies, these possibilities, other people will use them for other things, like Hitler. Hitler was into the occult. Did you know that? He was into the occult. He knew very. He knew what that swastika did. That swastika of its own has a tremendous power. By itself, has tremendous power. Tremendous impact on the human energy system, raises it up, energizes it. He knew that, and so he used it. The colors that he used, he knew what the human, from the occult means those things which are hidden. And I think our job is to make those things which are hidden available, open them up to the light of the sun, to the light of the gospel, and use that which is there for the good. Lots of people are using it for other reasons. Why do we abandon, or why do we not use that which we were given for the good? So if someone can use energy to make $1 million and lord it over all these people, why can't we use it to eliminate hunger? Why can't we use it to eliminate racism and sexism? Why can't we use it to heal the sick, to heal our economic systems, to have justice in the world, to have a truly evangelical church, truly cares.
It brought to mind, I talked with a man named Bruce Coburn, who's a very well-known Canadian folk singer, and for a while he dealt into the occult, And we were talking, and he said, when he came to the point where he realized that evil was very real, he knew he had a choice to make.
You bet.
And he has returned to Christian faith, and in the process, of course, has lost a number of people that were followers of his, but he has grown tremendously in every way, and he's a very energizing kind of person when you meet him. And he said he went through that process, and he said that he chose the way that he would use his energy.
That's so interesting that you should mention that. Some time back, I met a man who was very difficult to get along with. He was an extremely powerful man, and there were lots and lots of followers and stuff. And I thought he was very funny, and I liked him. You know, I thought his behavior was very funny. Instead of making me angry, it made me laugh, and I continued to send him positive energy. Later, I won't say anything about him because I don't want you to know who he is in that sense. But I found out later that this man was using black magic. And what kept me from being influenced by him was my own positive energy toward him. He couldn't get through.
What is black magic?
For example, you can take a picture of somebody, you know, a friend, a child, a loved one, and so on, and you can pray. You can hold your hands over that picture. You can pray for them and send them loving energy, and they'll get it. You can also do the opposite, and they'll get it. You've heard of the voodoo stories of sticking pins and little dolls and everything? That works. Part of the reason it doesn't work with Christians is because of baptism. And we don't even realize, because of our baptism, we don't realize the demonic sometimes. We don't run across it very often because we are very well protected.
Well, Magali, do you mean because our nature, having been baptized and raised in the church, that in itself is a protection?
It's a very
protection.
Much... It's very, also... That's a protection, but also a protection is that we don't even believe in it.
Okay.
So we don't give it energy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you know,
that's both good and bad.
We don't give it the time of day, you're saying.
We don't give it the time of day.
Okay.
Okay. And so that is both good and bad, because it's been so long since we've had people, you know, possessed with demons and that sort of thing. Most of us haven't had any direct experience with that, is that when it happens, we don't recognize it. So that's why I say it's both good and bad.
That's why in the Bible, so many times it tells about Jesus driving out demons.
Driving
after
out
baptism,
demons.
We don't run into
that so often. It happens, but not very often. Not that often.
It makes baptism sound like sort of like magic. Maybe we have to have a broader definition or idea of the powers.
Take that with a big grain of Magali, okay? That's my perception of what's happening, of why Christians don't run across that so often.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay? That's my perception. So.
Well, wouldn't it be in baptism because we received the Holy Spirit then, and He's within us, and that's a block to these other things being able to get to us, and that's not black magic. That's just that you've got an extra thing going for you.
Yes, obviously we're not talking about black magic at this point. We're talking about what. Notice our racist language: too, black magic, white magic. Okay, we gotta be real careful of that. But the thing on baptism, there is if we believe that we are held in love by Christ and we have been saved by Christ, we really are. That's the way it works. If we in some way have a doubt about that, we're more vulnerable, obviously. My mother was terrified because when I was a child, there was like a hex put on me by a witch doctor who got angry at her because my mother was laughing at a witch doctor in Panama. We lived in Panama for a while. And then he was saying, on your way home, be careful of the chivato. The chivato is He's like a big animal. And she said, well, how am I going to know what the Chivato looks like? And he says, well, he'll jump out on the road and he'll have these big eyes and you'll know. And she laughed at him and she says, don't be silly. If a cat jumps out on the road, you know, even if it looks at the car, I'm going to say that's a cat. And then he said, and then he became very angry and he said, your children will dream dreams, you know, and they will hear the voice of the witch, the cry of the witch, and they will hear voices in the night. You know, and he just kept describing all these awful things. And my mother just, you know, just simply laughed at him. So that night, my sister screams in the middle of the night, and the experience that she had was that she was thrown against the ceiling of her bedroom. That was the only time she had it, but I had it for 3 years. You know, where I would hear Indian voices, chains dragged along the boards and stuff. I'd see knives coming at me in the middle of the night, horrible faces and stuff like that.
Did you live there when the witch doctor told you?
No, I wasn't around. But the thing was that I didn't know at the time that what was happening was that during that time, when a child is 6, 7, and 8, you know that they have these night terrors. What's happening is that the psychic world and the world of tables and chairs are bleeding into each other. And it's hard for them to distinguish the two. They're going into the next dimension, and so they're experiencing these awful things in the and right in this, right next to this dimension, we have people who were murderers. And people who, you know, not real. Anyway, this is what I'm told, okay? So I didn't know at that time that I had the authority to say, get out and stay out. You have no power over me. But the power they had over me was that I was afraid, that I was a child. And I didn't know that I had the inner authority, you know, that I was protected. And you know when it went away? When we were with Catholic family. My mother brought a priest out to the house. He blessed the house. And it never happened again. Isn't that a pretty story? That's something? No, but you know what else happened too? I was never able to deal. I was always terrified of any sort of movie that had to do with ghosts and phantoms and any sort of thing. I would never look at any of that. I never dealt with anything that had to do with any sort of extrasensory information for years from the terror of that time, you know, because I didn't realize about that inner authority, you know, that one has to get rid of these things. Simply order them out and they have to leave, you know. So you were saying?
I think it's very meaningful as you come into the baptism of the Eastern Orthodox Church, where the sponsors, the parents, actually turn and spit on the devil in the ancient service of the church.
How
to turn around and come into the kingdom.
Beautiful.
Of life.
Beautiful.
That Larry Christensen documents this in the booklet that he has written on baptism. He's done a lot of research. And that, to me, takes real significance, the transferring of the child from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, and of course that gives the authority which is
You also remind me that I find that just absolutely very significant because of these kinds of experiences. Sometimes when people get into meditation, and if there would be one thing that I would suggest to anyone who chooses to follow that path, is do meditation. Listen to God. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. Do journaling. Get Carol to teach you how to journal. It's incredibly. Our entire lives talk to us of God, you know, but we don't know how to read it. And it's not until we start putting that sort of stuff together that we use our instrument better. And it's a type of refinement. But when some people start getting into meditation, they will, if they're supposed to go in and meet their guide, for example, some people don't have any guides to begin with, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. I don't have any guides. I have signals. I have no guides. Nobody talks to me. You know, nobody talks to me verbally anyway. Some people have these wonderful guides. They go in and they get told all these things, you know, they're angels or whatever. you know, whatever we want, whatever name is good for us. But some people begin that process, they get into this quiet state, and what they see is incredible darkness, and they get terrified. They become terrified of what they're facing. And that's not an uncommon phenomena, especially for people who have never gotten quiet. And there's a couple things that could be. One of them is that's one of those occasions when you say basically, get out. You know, to whatever spirit that might be, if it's a spirit. Get out, you have no place here. This is a place of light. You get out. They've got to go. They cannot stay. That's one thing. Second thing is that might be your own untapped creativity. And if these things mean anything to you, it's very possible that you're one of those people who has never used everything that you were given. And your own bottled up creativity will look like darkness, will look like something evil, you know, something negative. It isn't anything negative, it's unused creativity. Our own shadow sides. If we don't use it, it's negative. But if we use it, it turns into energy, into positive energy. But it's got to be used. We were given an awful lot of it. And most of us are constipated when it comes to creativity. Excuse me for the term. But we're bottled up like volcanoes. You know, and we will explode at some point in some way. Usually it's physically. Some people will explode mentally because it's up here that they've bottled it up. You know, some people will have heart attacks because it's in the heart area that they bottled it up. You know, some people will have ulcers because it's in the power center that they bottled it up. Whatever. You know, it depends.
So, Magali, so listening to the, like a tape or a sound, how does that work? Is that trigger or get kind of help you tune in to what's going on?
That's okay. These particular sounds are geared especially. There's healing happens on many levels, you know, because we have the body, and then we have many levels outside of the body. And when you begin a healing process, the healing starts out here, you know, I mean, in a metaphorical sense, it starts way out here or way up here or whatever, but not necessarily directly yet in the body. But the problem may be out here somewhere. And so each of the energy centers has a sound that it emits when it's healthy. When it hears that sound, it heals that center. Visually, for me, this may not be the way it is for you, but in meditation, I've come to understand that these energy centers put out a clockwise energy. When they go counterclockwise is when there's something wrong. And so I just check the energy centers. If my son is having a headache or something, I check his energy centers to see which ones are off. And it's like if he's got a headache, it doesn't mean that it's just his crown or his third eye energy center. It could be also he's often in the spleen energy center. You know, so one reverses that. You can just simply, this sounds really strange, I know, but your hand can become a magnet then, and you just reverse the energy center. And the kid settles down. He doesn't even know what's happening, he's asleep. You know? So it's like, but you see the effect of it. Another piece of that is that I believe it happens. I believe Jesus when he says, go out and heal the sick. You know, so it works for me. You know, that's an advantage that I may have over somebody else, but it's not much of an advantage. I'm not a healer.
You mean you just go and stand by your child and go counterclockwise?
I just, you know, if it's his head, I just do this, and it looks, I don't let anybody see me when I do it. I'm telling you about it because I find that, I don't know why, I am compelled to be actually very straight and honest about this stuff. So that if you ever find yourselves finding these things out in meditation, that you will know that at least one other crazy person gets that kind of information in strange ways. Okay? And the
What kind of meditation do you recommend?
It depends on you. You know, each of us has our own, we have our own recipes. you know, we are our own best doctors.
With a friend, he was doing TM for a long time, yeah. And then he had an experience where he said he felt something. He said it was an evil something, yeah. And he felt it was the devil, and he stopped TM. He's never done it since. Is that what you were referring to before as his creativity?
His creativity, for one. Number two, it could actually have been a negative spirit, and the... We want to use the old terminology, the devil will try to stop us from connecting, you know, and if we allow him to do that, you know, that's our business. He was successful. The closer we get to where we're going, the more trouble we're going to have, but we also have to know that we are going to be guided through those times, you know. He just needs to order him out, her out, what it out. Whatever, you know, get out of my life. This is where I'm going, and I'm going to stay here. I'll describe a couple of my own experiences so that you know. If it happens to you, it does. This happened here at Holden. I pray a lot for the dead, a lot. That seems to be part of my job on this earth, is to pray for the dead, and so they kind of hang around. You know, so I pray for them every day, and if I don't do it, I get pulled into some room someplace, you know, like yesterday I went upstairs to the bathroom. It was all dark and everything in the room kind of changed, and I said, I did forget you, didn't I? It's like it's our turn. You know, so I said a few prayers. I asked that God would heal them, you know, and send them to the place, their next best place, you know, where they're supposed to go next. So they might go from me to you, you know, for prayers, and then you send them on to so and so, and they send, you know, or whatever. I mean, I don't know what happens in those worlds, you know. All I know is that this was time, so it was like milking a cow. Dear God, send the energy, you know, it's a heal the dead, you know, in your name, you know. May the Lord Jesus Christ bless you, and may you go in peace. And I send them west, which is where the Indians send them. I figure that's pretty good. You know, but
right
here,
in my room, huh?
That's right. So anyway, but here at Holden, it's the only time it's happened to me here. You know, one night I was praying, and I had a longer time to pray with them, and we were having kind of a good time together, and we were praying along, and all of a sudden, they all left. All that nice purple energy was gone, and I was showered with an absolutely cold chill. And it was not my truth signal. It was like every hair on my body raised up, and I was just this ice cold. And this terror took over. I immediately ordered whatever had come in out, and I to get out of not only of my room, but out of the village. You know, it was not to be there, to get out and stay out. And the nice energy started coming back in, you know. But it took a while for the hair to go back, you know, for the fear to dissolve that way. But it goes faster than the fear dissolves, you know. It will go. But that's one of those things that if I get scared of it and say I don't want to do meditation anymore because I might encounter, well, then it does its job. Then the block is there, and it's finished with me. I'm done. They've stopped me. And they can stop you. Don't let them stop you.
Magali, when you order them out, do you do that in Christ's name?
Of course. Of course. I don't even have to say that because like that's so much a part of me that I mean that's the only place it could come from. You know, I ask. I even make a gesture. You know. You know, dear God, bring down healing. And I do this so that it will also come through me and heal me as it goes through. You know, bring down healing, may they be healed. A healer, by the way, the definition of healer is not one who heals. It is one who asks that another be healed. You know, there's a problem with that word, healer. You know, she had her hand up here.
I think too, have you ever had this encounter where, you know, I've been telling Magali that so much of what she's saying now is starting to make sense. I've never thought of it in these terms, but even with people, if a person is well, let's say, bent on an evil act. I was in a working in a county. I don't know how you put it to be nice, but it was a place for a place where they were holding people before they sent them to the state institution. And there was a woman that I knew that I had worked with, and she literally almost broke the body of a man. There were three policemen, and I prayed in the name of Christ, believing. And you know, for so long I believed it was just because we had a relationship. But I really believe I went in there with her alone in the room where they don't have anything, so they can't, in their pad walls. And she and I went in and I prayed and I made the sign of the cross. And she didn't hurt me. And I believe at that moment she wasn't acting with her own volition. So she could have hurt me. But I just want to say one other thing, because I don't know if any of you are feeling some of the same incredibly mixed emotions that I've been feeling, but can I share what happened this afternoon?
Sure.
My Magala came over to our house and she had a pain in her ear and she didn't know that my son was ill. And my son was ill and in bed, sleeping, and she went in and she could tell that it was his ear. And she prayed and, you know, he woke up after I left, so I don't know what's happened. But the thing is that when she was praying over me, she asked me to put my hand on him. And I've been just incredibly filled with mixed emotions since I met you. And
I've been very honest about it, too.
Yeah, and when I
bless her.
Took my hand off of his body, I could feel the energy. And I have never felt that in my entire life. And I'm, you know, not like someone would say, oh, she's just kind of like a groupie of you. And I haven't gone to any of Magali's sessions because we've had, my husband's been ill. And I went down his body, and when I left his body, I didn't feel it anymore. And this has just been an astounding experience for me. You know, it's just been astounding that I could feel that energy, his bodily energy. And I want to thank you. I feel so free not to perhaps accept everything, but that I feel like you've opened me up to something that I'm very excited about. And I believe, because even in the past experiences with this woman who I believe was possessed by evil spirits, that Christ will give me truth on what I can accept and what I can't.
There you go. That, and follow that. Yeah. Because my experience, remember, I'm Cuban. I was a Roman Catholic. I was a nun. You know, I've been a community organizer. I have a very different experience from any of you. You've got to follow your own guide. What's right for you is not, what's right for me is not necessarily right for you. The only reason I'm saying any of this stuff is that it may happen to you. You may start experiencing some things because it's happening now in the West. These unusual things that only happened in the East and now happening in the West. Why? Because I think it's time. We're about to blow each other up. And if we don't do something now, we don't use that which we were given now, it's going to be too late. I'm glad the message is not Magali can do these things. The message is, this is the human instrument. This is what God gave us. And we are to use it. And I know I'm going to walk out of Holden, and I'm going to be very sorry about some of the things I've said here, because I'm going to be terrified to go back to the national office. Because nobody over there knows any of this stuff.
Yeah. That's right.
Can you believe that? Of course.
I'm curious about that. When you have these experiences, do you have a lot of... I've had some similar types of experiences.
Good.
A lot of times I won't tell people about them or I'm very...
It's wiser sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily wise to do what we're doing here, what I'm doing here, for me. It's not necessarily wise to do this. But someone's got to start doing it. We've got to start sharing with one another what's going on.